Victor Wembanyama was the first overall draft pick in this past draft that happened, and he was drafted by San Antonio. And when he got drafted, in his interviews, he was saying, "When I got drafted, I hope to, you know, go to summer camp or training camp, summer league, all that, and make the team." Kind of like he needed to fight for a roster spot, when that's by far not the case at all. So you had that before the season even started, before he was even like playing for the team. And then you have this past weekend where he basically said he's fine going to the G League if he wasn't playing well. And that's just never going to happen. You're never going to have an asset like that unless they completely fall off, which by no means he's doing. So it's just all confusing to me where this mentality is coming from. And for me, I'm just wondering, will it eventually backfire on him? Either like it limits his potential just because of the mental aspect of it, because physically he's gifted. Obviously he needs to build a little bit because he's like 7'3", 7'4", but like it's kind of a skinny frame right now. Nothing too skinny. Like, it's not like just a absolute stick on the court. But if he happens to build, not necessarily like a Giannis Antetokounmpo, the where Giannis was thin when he was drafted and then he just is absolutely built now. I'm not saying Wembanyama has to get to that, but eventually over the course of these next, say, 5 years, he's going to look different than he is in his rookie season now. So the Spurs, they're not great right now. They're one of the worst teams in the league. They could very well be in a high lottery draft spot again next year, which I guess wouldn't hurt in terms of the future of the team. But right now, Wembanyama's not having the superstar impact to where it's leading to the team getting more wins. Now, he himself, if the Spurs are without him, they're just gosh awful. And we're looking at, yeah, for sure, like one of the worst teams in the league. Now, obviously, you have the Detroit Pistons right now, who only have like 4 wins on the season. Though, congrats to them. They beat another kind of one of the lower teams in the league, the Washington Wizards. They got a nice win over them this past weekend. It was like their first road win in, I don't know how many games, like something ridiculous, like a 19-game road losing streak. And if you don't know, the Pistons had lost like 28 games in a row, which is a single season NBA record. I think an NBA record, just if you were to combine seasons too. I think the Pistons beat that, or at least tied it, and they were like one away from the worst all time amongst North American sports organizations. So anyway, that's just a little bit of a tangent there. But Wembanyama on the Spurs, he leads the team in points and rebounds, and he has 3.2 blocks a game, which I'm sure leads the league. That's just a ridiculous number. So his impact and what he's doing, his actual performance, is not matching what he's saying about himself and I guess just the general confidence he has. I don't know if it's just he's saying it just to, I don't know, for media purposes. But like I said, it's just something to watch. The self-critiquing of Victor Wembanyama. How is this going to play out? I mean, he's almost guaranteed to be a superstar, just because of the freak he is athletically, given his size and build, like just what he can do at 7'3" 7'3" tall, 7'4" tall. It's just ridiculous, something that we haven't seen before. That's why he was one of the more highly looked upon, whatever you want to say, draft prospects since LeBron James back in 2003. So I'm not too concerned, but like I said, it's just something to keep an eye on in the future here. All right, let's get this going. Super wild card weekend, kind of a disappointment. There was only really one close game. I mean, some were a little bit interesting throughout, but really just kind of I'm not saying there were duds because there were still good offensive performances in those games, but just a little, yeah, a little disappointing. That's all I gotta say. But I'm gonna get into it because there is hope for better games, more competitive games here coming up in the divisional round. But more of just like a summary of the games, of the six games that happened. First, Cleveland Browns at the Houston Texans. Texans win this game 45-14. Kind of surprised with this result because the Browns defense has been very, very good this year. Like one of the best defenses in the entire league. And for them to allow 45 points to a Texas team, granted their offense is great, it was super surprising. Just uncharacteristically or uncharacteristic plays that were being made, just giving up deep throws. Like you had one play, well, it was Brevin Jordan, their second string tight end for the Texans. He catches a ball and goes for like 76 yards. And then another tight end, the top tight end for the Texans, Dalton Schultz, he catches like another 30-yard pass. You had good involvement from Nico Collins at wide receiver. And he's going to be kind of one of those super impact players if it comes to the Texans wanting to advance when they visit Baltimore next week. He needs to be, you know, 100-plus yards. Just that's solid, that rock for C.J. Stroud. And I think that's possible because Stroud was just excellent. Like I said, made the Browns defense look silly. And you would think a defense like that could get to a rookie quarterback, but I think that just tells you how good Stroud is, how I don't know, I just ahead he is of the other, even the other rookie quarterbacks that were drafted, like Bryce Young, who was drafted by the Panthers. That team was 2-15 this year, and unfortunately for them, they don't have the number one overall pick because in a past trade they gave that to Chicago, and it worked out well for the Bears because thanks to Carolina, they have that number one overall pick. But anyway, yeah, Stroud was excellent. Joe Flacco, who I had mentioned previously in the other podcast, he, you know, was a free agent kind of towards the end of his career now, but had won a Super Bowl with the Ravens back 10 years ago. And the concern with him was that would the turnover-worthy plays turn into actual turnover? So there's sometimes when you take a risky throw, but it pans out, or it's much more successful than it should be. Flacco seemed to be getting away with those. Wasn't happening this time. Just mistakes to where there was one play he was trying to throw it out of bounds, but got hit and then wasn't able to get enough on it. And meanwhile, he just threw a floater up to one of the Texans' corner safety in the area and just took it to the house. And then there was also another pick six the drive after or shortly after that. And yeah, it was just, it turned into a blowout real, real quick for the Texans. And yeah, like I said, if Cleveland's defense wasn't going to show up in this game, then it was going to be tough because it would eventually lead Joe Flacco to make mistakes. And that's what you saw. So yes, so the Texans win and now they're going to face Baltimore. Should be a good game there, but Baltimore, another tough defense. And I'm wondering if it's going to eventually catch up to Stroud here to where he kind of plays more like a rookie. But what you're seeing now, I mean, you can't doubt that he's going to have a good performance here. I mean, I think it's very likely that he could have another great performance again. That night, Saturday night, you had Dolphins at Chiefs. That was a very cold game, like minus 20s if you factor in the windshield. Super cold weather, and like I was thinking, it got to Miami. Chiefs win 26-7. Tua kind of stays being Tua in cold weather. He wasn't successful in previous cold weather games. Wasn't really successful in this game. Had a nice touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill there. And that was, I think they had also mentioned this in the broadcast, but if Tyreek Hill has like 100 plus receiving yards in the game. The Dolphins are undefeated this year, but when he doesn't, they fall to like, I think it was 2-5, and now it's 2-6 in games this season. So that's a credit to the Chiefs defense too, being able to contain those guys enough to where they reduce the explosive play outside of that one Hill touchdown. And really, I want to credit the Chiefs here for bringing the physicality, especially in the running game with Isaiah Pacheco. He's such a physical runner in the first place, and then you put him into an environment where it's a warm weather team in a cold weather environment, and that eventually is going to wear you down. I think he had like roughly 90 yards, so nothing insane. It's not like he went for 200 yards, but every single run, you're going to have to just, you're going to take a hit from Pacheco just because of how physical he runs. So that was a factor with the Chiefs offense that wore him down. Another factor here, and it's a reason I think the Chiefs are going to go or potentially go far in this playoffs, and it could be a savior for this offense, is rookie wide receiver Rashid Rice out of SMU. And the Chiefs throughout the season have struggled with their pass catchers, even Travis Kelce at times, their tight end there. Taylor Swift's boyfriend, obviously. But the Chiefs wide receivers were struggling with drops. Rashid Rice was kind of in the fold. Like, he would get, like, you know, the four catches for 40 or 50 yards type of game, but nothing super impactful. And then towards the end of the season, I mean, granted, it may not have shown up in the Chiefs record. They still got the 3 seed, but probably could have been better. Rice started to really emerge as a top target, and he proved it in that game against Miami, to where he had 8 catches, like 130 yards, a touchdown as well. So he is going to be a big factor, especially as they play next week in Buffalo at the Bills, which I'll get to that game eventually here. Like, that could be a reason. Like, if Kelsey's able to get hot, if Rashid Rice is able to get hot, if Pacheco, if the Chiefs offensive line can win that battle against the Bills defensive line, and Pacheco can just remain physical, take advantage of probably those holes that may be created, or just do it by himself, that's where the Chiefs can be dangerous, and that's where you can't really rule out a defending Super Bowl champion, regardless of how they may look from year to year. When it's playoff time, like I said, it's the one game sample sizes, and the Chiefs can really return the form if Rice emerges. Now we go to Sunday with the Packers at the Cowboys. Now, this is probably the most surprising result, because you had Green Bay go into Dallas as a 7 seed versus 2 seed and went 48-32. And this game was not as close as 48-32, because the Cowboys were just scoring garbage time touchdowns late, and they by no means had a chance to win this game after the first couple drives in the second half. And because Green Bay went out and went up 27-0. Dallas scored that touchdown late in the first half to reduce the 20. But Green Bay was just so overwhelming. I think what's the word I'm looking for? Just a small thing to kind of realize with this game is that the Packers won the coin toss, and instead of deferring, which it seems like most teams would do if they win the coin toss, get the ball in the second half to start, they decided to get the ball in the first half, and they went down and scored a touchdown. And the thing that makes their offense dangerous, even against a team like San Francisco, though San Francisco is going to have their own prolific offense, and we'll see kind of like how I thought this would go. Could Green Bay match Dallas's offense? It's going to be could Green Bay match San Francisco's offense? But the thing with the Packers is that they have the young weapons at wide receiver. They have Aaron Jones, who was great at running back. And that's good, because it was kind of a solo effort for him, since backup running back AJ Dillon was out this game. Jones, 118 and 3 touchdowns. And the Packers wide receivers, you have Romeo Dobbs, Christian Watson, if he's healthy, Jaden Reed, who I don't think had a single catch this game, which is kind of surprising. Dontavian Wicks, you have two tight ends in Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave. There's so many different weapons that quarterback Jordan Love can throw to, and who knows which one's going to show up. Like, Jaden Reed could have a big game next week. Who knows? Christian Watson could catch a deep ball. Maybe even like a guy like Bo Melton, who's more of a practice squad guy, even he could have some type of an impact, making a crucial catch or two in next week's game. And so I think the weaponry could catch people by surprise, and or it should tell you that it isn't much of a surprise that the Packers could put up this offensive performance. I was just kind of shocked by Dallas's secondary. They just gave up so many explosive plays. Now, that's a potential for them, and maybe just because of how dominant Green Bay was from the start, that like Dallas couldn't even stifle the running game to be able to kind of put pressure on the pass, be able to play a little bit safer of a coverage and take advantage of bad throws from Jordan Love. But that wasn't the case. I think they were just torched from the start. And 16 straight home games for Dallas, I think that's what their streak was. It seemed like Dallas was going to have a great game here, but You could say that offensively they could, but defensively, I mean, who knows? You had that Thursday Night Football performance a month or two ago against the Seahawks, where they gave up like 40 plus points, still won the game, but gave up a ton of points or high 30s, whatever it was. So you knew that a lackluster performance from the Cowboys defense could be there if the Green Bay offense was clicking, and that's what you saw. And it's just, yeah, it makes you question, like, how the heck do you lay this type of egg if you're the Cowboys? The expectations were so high, being a two seed in the NFC, potential to have that home divisional game against either Tampa Bay or Philly. It was kind of a great opportunity, but then here come the Packers, and it makes you question, and I'll kind of go off into a tangent about coaching availability here. It kind of makes you wonder if this was the last we saw Mike McCarthy as head coach of the Cowboys, because there's pressure. There's very good candidates that are available right now. Would owner Jerry Jones decide, you know what, maybe we go and replace McCarthy with Bill Belichick? Or, I mean, I don't think Mike Vrabel's really in talks, but let's just stick with Belichick for this conversation. Like, I don't think owners have any issue replacing their current head coach or their just opening in general, and bringing in Bill Belichick. So there's plenty of teams with coaching availabilities. I got the Falcons, Chargers, Cowboys, Commanders, Panthers, Titans, Raiders, even the Eagles. Maybe we'll see. We'll see about that. And then the Seahawks too. So, best spots or fits for Bill Belichick, I could very well see the Falcons. In fact, last night, yesterday, the Falcons owner Arthur Blank had a meeting with Bill Belichick, and that was made official through the Falcons social media accounts and newsletters and all that. So Belichick is already in talks with the Falcons, and that was kind of the team that was listed out there even before Belichick parted ways with the Pats. So the Falcons have been out there. The Chargers, that would be, to me, that's what I would want to see, or what I think would be the coolest or best fit, because you have quarterback Justin Herbert there, who I think is one of the better quarterback talents in the entire league. It's just that for some reason the Chargers find themselves almost in this purgatory of they can never be. They can be successful, but they can't ever be super, super successful or at the Super Bowl level successful. So that's something to look after, because they also have good defensive pieces. I don't know, given their salary cap situation, if they can really bring back too many of those guys, because they're gonna find themselves in another troubling spot there financially. Because they're already, like I said, they're already tight with the cap space. But that would be an interesting fit just because of the kind of Belichick Herbert combination there. Like, that would be interesting to see. The Dallas Cowboys, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Jones was like, hey, Bill, we want you to be the head coach here. Obviously, they would fire Mike McCarthy before that. But that's another realistic possibility. And there was kind of the rumblings of, okay, there's potentially these playoff teams who could be out, or whose head coach could be out if the playoffs results aren't great. And that was the situation. I think Dallas was a team to think about, maybe even Philadelphia, which that's more interesting now after the results of the wild card weekend. So those two teams where the coaches may not necessarily be safe to where Belichick could come in and replace them. I could very well see that happening with the Cowboys. Commanders, kind of iffy. The only thing that makes me think Belichick could go to the Commanders is because they brought in kind of a new hiring firm of former executives and VPs who are kind of leading the charge in hiring GM and coaches. Now, I believe they hired their GM already. If I'm not mistaken, it's the assistant GM of the 49ers. I could be wrong, but I believe that's who it was. So they have brought him in already, and now I'm sure they kind of want to make a little bit of a splash here at head coach to really push this forward with the Josh Harris ownership group. Now, remember, Josh Harris took over for Daniel Snyder, who I would say did a terrible job as owner of a franchise, with given all the possible charges or just cases of workplace harassment and. There's so much stuff, so much crud in regards to that organization under Snyder, that I'm glad it's a different ownership group now. But Josh Harris, I'm sure he's looking to change the culture. I know there's possibility of even a new stadium build. I believe it'd be like outside of the DC area. But anyway, so they're really looking to change and be better in the future organizationally, kind of get that, like I said, that yuck or slime of the past out of there. So I was saying they're probably going to make a splash here at the head coach. So that's why I wouldn't rule out Belichick there. The Panthers, I don't really see it. I feel like Carolina may hire kind of a newer head coach, or a head coach who hasn't been in that role previously. So like a coordinator role, maybe someone like Lions offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, maybe someone like that. I would say that's probably the same for the Tennessee Titans too. I feel like that ownership group and that GM would want to bring in maybe a younger coach or an unproven coach, someone from a coordinator role. So those two I'm kind of ruling out for Belichick. The Raiders, I don't think so, because it seems to me they're going to hire their interim head coach Antonio Pierce, who replaced former head coach Josh McDaniels this season. I think Pierce is probably the good fit for Vegas. Philly, I don't really see it. Heck, I don't even know if they're going to even fire Nick Sirianni, their current head coach. I just think that's a step too far, but you can never count it out. I just don't see Belichick going to Philly in general, even if the spot is open. And then Seattle, I don't see that either. I think the ownership wants too much control of that, and I think Belichick kind of wants to avoid it, to where he has a little bit more freedom to say make roster moves, really get his system in there. So Seattle, I would also avoid there. So yeah, that's it. I don't expect any other current playoff teams or playoff teams that lost to be searching for a new head coach here. I think all the other teams are pretty safe in that regard. So yeah, those are kind of the 8 or 9 teams that you're thinking about for head coaching availability. And like I said, those are kind of the fits I see Belichick making there. So kind of like Falcons, Chargers, Cowboys, maybe Commanders, Panthers, Titans, not so much. Raiders, not so much. Eagles, the same deal. And then Seahawks, definitely. So those kind of three, maybe four teams right there for Belichick. Los Angeles Rams at the Detroit Lions. This was the fourth Super Wild Card game, and this was the only really close game here. The Lions end up winning 24-23. Great performance by both Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford. You kind of thought this would be a high-scoring game offensively, and it wasn't, I guess, I mean, they were what? They were projecting around 50 points. We got to 47 here. I think the thing for the Lions is that home crowd was so into it. It was basically a historic moment because it was their first playoff win in 32 years. They were able to do it in Detroit. And now they're hosting another game next week in Detroit against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which should be a very good game. And the thing that I question from the Rams is that they were trailing. They were down the 1 point there with, I want to say it was either 2 or 4 minutes left in the game. And it seemed like they were in very long field goal range. And with one timeout left, they decided to punt it and give it back to the Lions. And eventually the Lions run out the clock. Just because the Rams had ended up using that final timeout, and they were in a spot to where the Lions got enough first downs to where they could just kneel the ball out. So that's the thing I kind of question. Like, they probably should have went for it on that fourth down instead of punting, or they could have kicked a field goal maybe to try to get the lead. Though I know their special teams hasn't been great, especially with field goal kicking. So I get it. I get the trust in the defense, but that, given how prolific the Lions offense can be, that was a little troubling to see. You would think you would just give the offense a chance to make a play there and try to win the game, but that just didn't happen. So with Jared Goff, he used the most solid, consistent weapon he could in that offense, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, who had 7 catches, like 110 yards. Just St. Brown has been one of the more consistent wide receivers, maybe not necessarily the most prolific wide receiver in terms of stats and yardage output, but consistently game over game, you know St. Brown is going to be there, be a reliable target for Jared Goff, and he proved that again in this game against the Rams. The Rams offensively as well, Puka Nacua, who has been an unreal rookie get for the Rams, drafted in the 5th round out of BYU. Just a great fill-in too for Cooper Kupp, who was dealing with the hamstring early on in the season. Just never really looked like himself or the peak of Cooper Kupp that we saw 2 or 3 years ago, where he was the best receiver in the league. To have Nacua come in and really take over that number one role for the Rams was super important. He had like 180 yards in this game, is could very well be a top five wide receiver next season, especially with Stafford throwing him the ball. So that was good to see from them. That ending play is kind of just the only thing that you really question. I mean, it was just such a close game. Anything really, one play here or there could have changed everything. But I just had a feeling or trust in the Lions that they could get this done in this game. And it turned out to be that way. They like I said, they host another game next week. You have tight end Sam Laporta, who's going to be getting healthier here. He was dealing with a little bit of a knee injury, was still able to play in this game, which was kind of surprising. So you would think he would get better and better as the weeks go on here. So maybe he's more involved. He still did catch a touchdown in this game, but only had 3 catches for 14 yards. So that's something that just to keep an eye on. I if they can get Sam Laporta involved more in next week, and even more involvement for the running backs and Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, the Lions could very well be stepping into their first NFC championship game in I mean, is it ever or just in a long while? So I'm very hopeful for this team coming up. But yeah, great game. They were able to hang on and get the W, which is the most important part of the playoffs, just survive in advance. So moving to the final day of Super Wildcard Weekend, you had the Steelers at the Buffalo Bills, and this game was originally scheduled for 1 o'clock on Sunday, got moved to the 4:30 on Monday because of the lake effect snow that was in the Buffalo Orchard Park area, just Western New York area. So I had initially said that the Steelers could make this competitive given the weather that was going to be in Buffalo. Now, since the game got postponed or moved back, the environment on the field was a much more calmer one. They were to completely clear the field off, and granted it was still cold, the snow was away and stayed away. It was obviously snowing a lot on Saturday and Sunday, but not on Monday, and there was more snow in the seats of the stadium that they were unable to fully clear out prior to the game than the field. They were able to clear the field perfectly, and it made it a great environment for Josh Allen. That's my concern with the snow, was that Josh Allen was going to, I mean, he could obviously throw in anything just given his arm talent, but it was going to be tougher and more run game dependent if the snow was playing an impact. Josh Allen was able to still just do his usual thing, still complete over 20 passes. Really, he had tight end Dalton Kincaid involved, actually had a bunch of his receivers involved. He was distributing the ball all over the place. And you got to kind of credit the Bills' defense here. It's almost like a Kansas City Chiefs situation, to where even if the offense is struggling, you have the reliable team defense to keep them in games all the time. And I think that's what's going to carry them throughout this playoffs, is that you're going to have, even with the injuries, you're just going to have I think there's such a togetherness that'll keep them in games, even against Kansas City with the offense clicking. But I mentioned the injuries, and that could be an issue, because they were piling up on Monday, and you just wonder which straw is going to break the camel's back, especially as they face good quarterback play, because Mason Rudolph is average, reliable for the Steelers as a quarterback, but it's definitely not a Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, CJ Stroud level of quarterback. So that's where you're wondering, okay, are these injuries eventually going to catch up to where they just get burned and have to really rely on Josh Allen and the offense to get the job done? May get cornerback Rasul Douglas back this week in the divisional round. We'll have to see there. And they could get Gabe Davis, the wide receiver Gabe Davis, back as well. So that could be helpful in the passing game, and just when it comes to blocking. Gabe Davis is an underrated blocker for the Bills. So yeah, we'll have to see how the health of the team turns out. But like I said, the defense has been solid throughout the injuries, and even if they deal with the injuries there, you could think you could rely on Josh Allen and especially his running game. You saw that in the game against Pittsburgh. He went for a long 52-yard touchdown run, I think the longest touchdown run by a QB in postseason history. If Josh Allen can utilize his legs in this game, that's just another avenue or way they can win it. Obviously, you have James Cook at running back, and then the other secondary running backs, Latavius Murray, maybe Leonard Fournette, Ty Johnson even. But if Josh Allen can utilize his legs and put more plays in the playbook with that could be another issue going into the divisional round for the Kansas City Chiefs. Philadelphia Eagles at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This was the final wild card game, and this was a little shocking, especially because how the Eagles lost this game. I was thinking this was going to be ugly not ugly this way, but ugly that the Eagles were going to win this game, utilize their run game, and that's how they were going to get it done, just survive in advance and go to Detroit and try to win there when they were a little bit healthier, when they got AJ Brown, their top wide receiver, back, all that. That didn't happen. They continued their losing momentum, where they lost five of the last six games in the regular season, and they lost this game against Tampa Bay. They just looked, the Eagles to me looked flat. They were almost broken, just no energy. Tampa brought the energy. The home crowd obviously helped them there. And it was kind of shocking in the passing game. Like, Baker Mayfield had 320 passing yards, but their top two receivers, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, only had 93 combined receiving yards. They got a lot of help from Kate Otten, their tight end, who had 8 catches for 89 yards. That was very helpful. It's always good to have your tight ends be successful against the Eagles. That seems to be a trend. And they just had help from their like third, fourth, fifth string wide receivers, to where you have a big play by David Moore, I believe it was. It was just a good overall offensive team effort by the Bucs to just really keep the Eagles out of the game. And it just didn't seem like the Eagles had anything offensively. Like, Devonta Smith, their top wide receiver in this game, since AJ Brown was out, had a great game still, like 140 yards and what, 9 catches, I think, or something like that. So they had that going, but the running game was just super surprising to me. I mean, the Eagles had 42 team rushing yards, and I'm pretty sure in games where they have 91 or less team rushing yards this season, they're 1-4, or they were 1-3, now they're 1-4. So the fact that they couldn't get the running game going, heck, they scored a touchdown in this game, and then they decided to do the tush push because there was a penalty by Tampa Bay, so they got them closer, and that, so they decided to go for two. And the tush push play, where they just push Jalen Hurts, the quarterback, into the end zone. They usually line up two running backs, maybe a tight end behind them. It's like a rugby play. It works most of the time. Didn't work this time against Tampa Bay. So if the tush push wasn't even working, then you knew it probably wasn't going to be a good day for the Eagles. And that turned out to be the case. But it was just super surprising that they couldn't get anything going with the running game. That's their key to success a lot of the times, and they just couldn't get it going. So it's big. This is big for Tampa. They're kind of riding momentum now here. I'm pretty sure they've won like 6 of the last 7 now. Now they go into Detroit, which is going to be a very, very tough environment. Who knows how Baker's going to perform there? We'll have to see. But that should be another competitive, fun game to watch in the divisional round. But yeah, Eagles underwhelmed, and Tampa Bay for sure overwhelmed.